Head Start Basketball.
Hey Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Dominic Amorosa, head boys basketball coach at Strike Judge with College Prep in Houston, Texas, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And we thought we were jumping on to talk a little normal NBA week, a little NBA talk, and then boom, today we had the gaslighting of the Brooklyn Nets. So I'll let you go ahead and start.
So here are my takes.
Okay.
And my takes are, I'm happy for Steve Nash, Mike.
Yes, I agree. I couldn't agree more. That was my first thought, is what a blessing for Steve Nash to be fired. He still gets to collect his paychecks and doesn't have to deal with that circus anymore.
Someone, I don't know, this might be a reference that you don't get, Mike, but I saw on Twitter today that there's a scene in the Spider-Man 3 movie, not the most recent Spider-Man, the original Spider-Man trilogy, where Tobey Maguire is walking through the streets and they're playing Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head, and he's like the happiest person. Well, someone superimposed Steve Nash's face walking in the pouring rain of Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head, and I thought that was funny. Listen, this is just a disaster. The whole Nets situation is a disaster. We have all the stuff over the weekend with Kyrie, okay? And we're not going to talk very much about that, but ridiculous nonsense that he's even standing up for what he's talking about, and that's all we're going to talk about. That's all I'm going to say on it. But they've got all this stuff. They've got the sideshow that is, they're terrible. They lost again tonight, even though he was fired. Jock Vaughn, poor guy, had to step in and take over. Okay. They've got that. Then you got Ben Simmons, who's played like three games, who now is, his back's bothering him again, or it was his knee, his back, I don't know, his whole body's probably bothering him. And then, and all that, and then Steve Nash is fired, and then they come out, you know, we can just keep throwing coals on the fire. And they are going to hire Ime Udoka, who's been suspended by the Celtics for doing something pretty improper, and the fact that he's going to be coaching theoretically this season, this had to be planned out. This isn't like all of a sudden, not to mention the timing is strange because the Nets won last night. So like, why now? Like something had to have come to a head. And I like how they said, the decision to fire it's a mutual decision. So, I saw another
Steve Nash couldn't run fast enough to get out of that building.
Someone on Twitter wrote, Nets brass, : Steve, we're going to relieve you of your duties. And then it said, Steve Nash, thank God, and runs out of office.
Look, I don't even know where to start with the story. Let me start with the end. I honestly hope this team never wins another game. and the fact of what they're going about doing and what they have done to their franchise by turning it over to the inmates running the asylum. I mean, there's never been a better case of the inmates running the asylum than what we have in Brooklyn.
Joe Tate's probably rolling in his grave, Mike.
You look, you go back to the, let's start from the very beginning of you fire Kenny Atkinson, you get rid of the young scrappy team. And look, there's 29 other franchises that probably would have hitched their wagon to KD and Kyrie. I think we're kidding ourselves if we say that there wouldn't have been other teams, that Brooklyn was the only team that would have done that. That's disingenuous. It's not true. And clearly, there are plenty of other franchises that would have done the same thing. And yet, we said it right from the very beginning that I'm not sure that the personalities were the right personalities to turn your franchise over to. And then you have James Harden added to that mix. And then eventually you have Harden force his way out and you bring in Ben Simmons. It's just, I don't know if you're Joe Tsai, the owner of the Brooklyn Nets, I don't know how at this point right now you look yourself in the mirror and say, hey, we're doing a bang up job here in Brooklyn with our franchise. It just, you go to the Kyrie piece of it, and as you said, we're not going to dive into all the different things that he's quote unquote promoted, but clearly what the Nets do is you send out a tweet disagreeing with Kyrie's statement.
Joe Tsai. Yeah, Joe Tsai sent a tweet, right? The Nets didn't send a tweet out. Only Joe Tsai sent
Joe
a tweet
out. So sends out a tweet. Then you turn around and you fire your coach. Makes no sense. I mean, it makes sense in the context of they haven't been playing well, and I guess. But the fact that Kyrie went through the whole thing that he did last year with the anti-vax stuff, and then he comes out and he's had multiple statements that completely contradict the way that he's conducted himself since he's been in Brooklyn, talking about guys need to show up every day and people need to play. And just, I mean, it's just complete ridiculousness. And today you fire Nash. And so that in and of itself, I guess to me was, and stunning wasn't the word, but that to me reeked of, okay, here's a player who has done things that I think we can all probably agree upon the fact that, let's just say, things that are not conducive to creating a positive environment, and things that in the locker room, in the media, just the way that he dealt with the Nick Friedell situation in the press conference. I heard someone call him a faux intellectual, which I thought was probably a pretty good way to put it. The guy who said that said he probably never even watched the movie that he purportedly was promoting, which, again, we don't know if he did or he didn't. But I think the point here is that the way that Kyrie has conducted himself from a strictly basketball standpoint and its impact on the team, he's a guy who just isn't taking anything into consideration about the basketball situation around him, his teammates, his coaches, his organization, nothing. It's all about Kyrie and what Kyrie wants and what Kyrie wants to do. And then,
whose idea was it to give him a microphone after that, all that whole
you,
thing?
Don't you dare question him. Don't you dare question him.
Whose idea? And the Nets PR, who said, this is a great idea, let's do this?
Well, it's probably, right? He has to be made available to a certain extent, right?
No. Not every player goes up on the podium. Like, he was sitting in the front of the press. They normally pick one or two people to do it. Well, he didn't have to do it.
Probably didn't have to, but
come on. Look, I'm just saying, the day of.
It's another ridiculous piece of this whole thing. It just doesn't make sense. None of it from, if you're Brooklyn and you're this organization and you've allowed this guy to sort of get away with whatever he wants to get away with and say whatever he wants to say, and your only response to that is to send a scathing tweet, And then you're going to turn around and fire your head coach. And then not only that, now you're going to turn around and you're going to hire a guy who has been suspended by another organization. And I guess some more details have come out, at least a little bit, that he used derogatory language prior to the relationship that he had with the Celtics female staffer. We don't know exactly what that is or isn't, but clearly the Boston Celtics were traumatized enough when you heard Brad Stevens speak about it, when you heard their owner, Wick Grosbeck, speak about it, that they were clearly shaken up by the results of the investigation or whatever it was that they knew. And for the organization to then, who has been so dysfunctional, to go and hire a guy who has these things on his resume. There's no one else in the New York City area that can coach basketball that they could find to coach this team. You have to get a guy who's on suspension from another team. And look, Udoka has a history because he coached there a couple years ago as part of Steve Nash's first staff. And then he was also, I guess, with Philadelphia for a year with Ben Simmons. So maybe he has a prior relationship there. But I just don't see, as if Brooklyn doesn't have enough PR problems and issues within their organization, now you're going to go and you're going to hire a guy who's been suspended from the Celtics, and that's the guy that you're going to bring in. There's nobody with a clean record that we can bring in to coach this team. There's nobody out there. There's no one. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense from an organizational standpoint. And if I was a fan of the Brooklyn Nets or I was in the league office, I would be embarrassed, quite frankly, by what's going on. I'm surprised that, and maybe they will, maybe the league office will have something to say about the hiring of Udoka. I have no idea whether or not that's an area where they can intercede, not intercede, whether they will or they won't.
Listen, I would imagine that they had already addressed that, Mike, because there's no way that this would have happened. Nash would have gotten fired. And, I mean, I don't know if it's called tampering. I don't even know what this is, because it's not like they couldn't have been talking to him before. Like, it was like 15 minutes after Nash got fired that Woj and Shams were reporting that Ime Udoka's going to take it over. There's got to be some kind of tampering or other stuff, unless the Celtics, I know they said the Celtics gave permission for the Nets to talk to Udoka, so maybe...
It's another indictment, right? It's another indictment. Get this guy. Like, you want to take this guy off our hands? You want to take this situation off our hands? Great. Tremendous. Please.
I mean, clearly the team is not affected because that guy, Mazzola? Yep. The team's 5-1. So it's not like they've, so far, I mean, it's early, but they haven't missed a beat. They're 4-2. Sorry. The only team they can't handle, Cleveland Cavaliers. But listen, the Celtics are probably had that. Who's happier, Mike? Here's a question. Are the Boston Celtics happier or is Steve Nash happier?
Steve Nash has got to be happier.
Well, for sure. I agree.
Now, the question with Steve Nash is, does he ever want to coach again? Or is this experience just soured him completely where he's out and just like,
If I was him, I'd go back to Canada, watch soccer, and just do your thing, dude. Like, listen, this is the second thing he's been a part of that's been a train wreck. The first thing was him winning back-to-back MVPs. Sorry, Steve Nash, I apologize.
Man, come on. Do Steve like that.
He didn't deserve the second one, Mike. Come on.
All right, don't do that.
I'm kicking him while he's down, Mike.
Two totally separate things. Look, I can't fathom just the, I don't even know what the word is that I want to use here. I can't even begin to fathom what Brooklyn has done over the last 3 or 4 years with this particular group of players, with management, with Nash, with now, if they're really going to hire Udoka. they deserve every single thing that they get. I honestly can't be rooting. I can't be rooting any harder against a team, an organization. To me, it's like I said, I can't believe the league's not going to get involved in this thing. It just seems like everywhere they've gone wrong, everywhere they could go wrong, they have gone wrong. And I'll be honest with you, it's in my book, poof.
Mike, I have a question for you.
It's deserving.
Do you know what the saddest thing of this whole thing is?
What's that?
Can you blame James Harden for wanting to get out of there at this point?
No, but again, he's a contributor to the whole thing.
In his own small and delightful way,
he's a contributor.
but he's nowhere near it. Like, I mean,
how do these guys not know? Like, I mean, maybe crazy doesn't recognize crazy, but
I mean,
there's no way those three personalities were going to work. There's no way that Durant, Kyrie, and Ben Simmons is going to work. There's no way. There's just no way. It's not going to happen. It's not happening.
It's not happening. So here's the question, Mike. Okay, so let's just do this now.
Okay.
Are all three of those players on the team at the trade deadline?
I mean,
it was a long pause, Mike.
There's a long pause because part of you said, I guess my bigger question is, when does Durant demand a trade again? But he's got half of what he asked for.
Yep.
Right? Sean Marks has to go next. Then Kevin will be happy. And he'll be hanging out with Kyrie. And they'll be getting slaughtered every night. And whatever. I don't know. Look, I don't think that... if I had to bet, I would... who wants these guys? I mean, nobody wants Kyrie.
I think LeBron would take Kyrie right now.
Maybe.
No, it's not maybe.
Maybe. I guess the Lakers are another dysfunctional they're another completely dysfunctional organization.
Well, that's our next topic, Mike, so we'll save that for a minute.
Yeah, we'll get there. But look, I guess LA is a completely dysfunctional environment at this point, so maybe they take on Kyrie. But how do you justify, how do you sell that to your fans? I guess ultimately what this whole thing tells me is that, and not that I'm surprised or not that I didn't already know, but professional sports bears no resemblance to the real world. Absolutely none. I mean, what this whole organization has done, the way they've gone about doing their business in any other walk of life, and look, I know professional sports is different. I get it. But man, the dysfunction and just the sheer audacity of some of the things that have gone on there are incredible. And if you would have asked me to name, okay, if you would have told me this morning at 9 a.m., Steve Nash is getting fired, who are the candidates for the Brooklyn Nets job? How many names, honestly, would you have come up with before Udoka would have been on the list?
Probably 10.
I mean, I don't even know if he would have been. I don't know that he would have even made my, like, I don't even know if I would have even considered him. Even for a second, going, even if they wanted him, even if they thought, oh, this guy's perfect for the job because of X, Y, and Z. Just the, I guess, look, the public relations piece, right? Think about our own Cleveland Browns here and Deshaun Watson.
Yep.
It does, things that make no logical sense outside of the sports world make completely logical sense to somebody inside the sports world. And I don't care who you bring in as coach. You can bring in Phil Jackson. You can bring in Red Auerbach. You can bring in Pat Riley. You can bring in Popovich. You're not fixing what's wrong with the Brooklyn Nets with the current personnel that you have. Kyrie is never coming back to me as a winning player. I just don't ever foresee him being in a scenario, in a situation where he's going to contribute in any meaningful way to winning basketball. Durant is salvageable probably, but
he's also in his 16th year.
Right. Well, and I think Durant, you look at, okay, why did he leave Golden State, right? Because he wanted to put his imprint on a team. He wanted to win a title as the team was his team. It looks like that ship has sailed.
Yeah.
I don't see where you're going to put together a team around Durant as the best player, as the leader. The way this situation has completely tanked, I just don't see that ever happening. Now, maybe he gets moved and he goes to a team that he still might end up being the best player, but to think that what he's done and where he's at and how he's going to be remembered, this Brooklyn Nets tenure clearly to me damages his long-term whatever, his legacy in some small way. Doesn't diminish what he's done on the court, and I've said it many, many times. I don't know that there's another guy that I've ever watched shoot the ball that I just feel like the guy's never going to miss. But this whole thing about this franchise and being a leader and historically where he fits in, it has to have an impact. It just has to. This is such a mess, and it's not getting better anytime soon. And to me, it feels like they're only compounding. Every time a decision or news comes out, they're just compounding one mistake on top of another.
I agree. But listen, feeling good about our under. We took the under on that, right?
I'm feeling really good about that.
Well, listen,
feeling very,
and
very
I'm feeling
good.
More and more better, feeling better and better about the Cavs and their likelihood to be a top 3 or 4 seed right now. Like, genuinely. I know I said I wanted them in 6, but I'm not going to complain about a 2 seed. I'm not going to complain about a 3 seed. Like, I just don't want them in the 4-5 seed. So I think they could be a 2-3 seed, Mike. And I don't know if you want to – is there anything else you want to talk about the Nets, or can we
move on? Let's move on. Whole thing, it's embarrassing. It's just embarrassing.
United Basketball Plus is your doorway to all things basketball. If you desire to go further, faster as a coach and leader, if you want to maximize your team's potential, or if you simply just want to be a student of basketball, United Basketball Plus is the resource to take you to the next level in your basketball journey. As a member, you will have access to some of the greatest minds in basketball today. The in-depth videos provided by these coaches and basketball experts will help make difficult concepts simple to understand and teach. With your membership, you will have access to video playbooks, sports psychology, fast model playbooks, skill development, speed agility, and various other United Basketball Clinic videos. Your annual membership also includes access to our 2021 United Basketball Clinics, as well as discounts to attend future basketball clinics. The best way to find out all we have to offer is to visit us at unitedbasketballplus.com.
Okay, so let's talk Cavs really quickly. We won't talk long Cavs, but man, are they fun to watch, Mike? They are just fun to watch. They're fun to see. You know, they even when they get down in situations, they just don't give up. You know, on Sunday they didn't have their best game, and they still pulled it out. I almost had a thing queued up to text you in the fourth quarter. Man, the Cavs been watching too many Browns games on Sundays because they came out sleepy, they came out dragging, they couldn't do anything. And then all of a sudden, the fourth quarter happened. And man, Kevin Love was amazing. Donovan Mitchell continues to be amazing. Obviously, Friday night's performance between Mitchell and LeVert. I thought it was pretty funny when LeVert scored 41 on Friday and then 1 point on Sunday. But listen, listen, you're going to get that with
20
him.
A game in the last two, man. Come on.
Yeah. But they're such a fun team to watch. And I think Garland's only going to obviously add to that. Like, this team's done this all basically without Garland. So, the question...
Their best player from last season, by the way.
Yeah. He's not their best player now, but he is their best player from last season, for sure. And Mobley's looked better, Mike. After your comments last week, I kind of was like, okay, I got to watch Mobley and see. And I know, Was it Wednesday? Oh, the Boston game, right? Or not Boston. Who'd we play on Wednesday? Anyways,
the Knicks.
He had a really good game on Wednesday night. And
you mean Sunday? Are you talking about Sunday night, or are you talking about...
Well, I'm talking about the night. No, the night, it had to be the Knicks game, because he got him and him and Jared Allen got like the chain, you know, the chain award.
Yeah, the Junkyard Dog.
Junkyard Dog. He had a good game that day, but I mean
that was Orlando. Are you talking about Orlando, the night after we podcasted?
Yeah, Orlando. Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
So he definitely looked good in that game. Speaking of Orlando really quick, did you see Luka and what he did to Bobo?
I did not.
He backed Bobo down and scored on him, fadeaway, and then he did the too short thing. I about lost it.
Bobo's killing it, man.
Yeah. So Cavs, Mike, go ahead.
All right, so the number one takeaway is Mitchell has been absolutely incredible, better than advertised. I think rejuvenated, clearly enjoys playing with this team. It sort of carries over from what we saw during last year's season where guys on the bench were just locked in. It clearly seemed like they were together, and that feeling permeates this team as well. And it feels like Mitchell has fit right in there in terms of the team chemistry. What he's brought to the game on the floor, scoring-wise, being able to generate offense when there really isn't much, going to the basket, shooting threes, and then I think he's probably at his career high in assists at this point. He's averaging almost 7.5 assists per game, which I don't think he's gotten to that level at any point in his career in Utah. And he's been, I would say, functional defensively. Not a lockdown defender, but a guy that is not just a turnstile, at least through these first six games. And so if you can get that from him, that's clearly going to help. On the interior, defensively, Mobley and Allen have been exactly as advertised. The Cavs are really difficult to score on. They're, I think, one of only two teams, them and the Suns, that are in the top five in offense and in defense. When it comes to Mobley, I do think he's looked better in the last three games since we saw last week. I still think that there's things that when I watch him, I think the same, concerns or things that I would like to see him do better. That list hasn't changed. I think he's got to get stronger so that he can punish guys in the post. He's shown over the last three games, he's got that little nice jump hook, and he's had some ability to shoot some floaters over guys, but I'd still like to see him be able to get stronger so he could get on the post and punish mismatches a little bit easier. And then I don't know what you're seeing, but it feels like every time he puts the ball on the floor from outside the three-point line, he's getting it poked away like 50% of the time. Somebody reaches in there and pokes it away. So I think improving his handle and getting stronger, which for a guy who's 20 years old isn't that surprising. Right now, especially once Garland gets back, this team in this iteration of it doesn't necessarily need him to be that great scorer. When you start talking about, as I've said numerous times, when you start talking about this team winning a title, you're going to need Evan. Now, look, if Donovan Mitchell can play at the level he's played at in these first six games, Donovan Mitchell Donovan Mitchell plays this way, he can be the best player on a championship team playing at the level that he's playing at right now.
Yeah, I agree. Listen.
But is that sustainable? And so I think you want more offense out of Mobley. Jared Allen is what he is offensively. He's gotten better. He continues to improve. He's got a great touch around the basket. And the guy has such long arms. He dunks. He has the weirdest dunks from out of the post where he's like turned the wrong way. It looks like he's going to do like the Wilt Chamberlain dipper finger roll. And then all of a sudden he's dunking it. And he's really, really fun to watch. That guy plays so hard, but his ceiling offensively, he's probably getting pretty close to it. Whereas Mobley still has so much upside. And like we've said, your best player from last season, Darius Garland, has played 13 minutes this season. And when you start talking about Mitchell and Garland on the floor, with the ability to generate offense and create shots for other people, you're talking about something that not a lot of teams have. Now, both those guys are a little on the small side, and the Cavs have been shooting the heck out of the three, which probably they're going to end up coming back to earth a little bit there. But the way that this team is playing, if Mitchell can stay at a level that's 90% of this, Cavs are going to be right there for that 2-3 seed. I really think that they've got a decent shot at getting up there, especially when you consider some of the struggles of the teams that people thought were maybe going to be a little bit better than what their record indicates. And of course, again, the first 10 games of the season, the first 15 games of the season, it's a very, very small sample size. And you can take some things away from it, but there's some other things that probably are going to even themselves out. It's not very often that, especially in the NBA, that we get things completely wrong, where the consensus about a team, and again, unless somebody gets hurt or something goes completely haywire, most of the time, the way things people think things are going to go is usually how they end up. So we'll see. But I'm optimistic of what we've seen before. And as you said, they're super fun to watch for sure.
Yep. All right. So let's do our really quick predictions on the week, Mike. Okay. Wins, losses.
All right.
Wednesday, we are once again playing the Boston Celtics at home. Win.
I think you double down and say it's a win. I agree.
Friday, we're at Detroit.
It's a win.
To win. Sunday, we start a great two-game set. Sunday, at the Lakers. That's a win.
That's a win.
Monday, at the Kawhi-less Clippers.
That's a win.
It's a win. So we're going to say they're going 4-0 over the next four. I think tomorrow's the most questionable of the four, in my opinion, right? Like
Boston's clearly the best opponent. I mean, I think what it comes down to is it's hard to go 4-0, and especially when you're talking about 3-0 on the road.
So if we go three and one, you're happy.
I think if you go 3-1 in that stretch, you're probably okay. Happy.
If you pick a game to lose, which game is it? The Clipper game? You don't want to lose to the Lakers.
No, you don't want to lose to the Lakers. I don't think you lose to the Pistons. I'd say probably the Clippers game.
That's the one you want to lose if you're going to lose one. Okay.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't think, yeah.
Man, I will say this, Mike. Like, that four-game Western West Coast swing, like, before the season started, I would have thought
it looked pretty intimidating.
Well, not intimidating, but it would have been like something that I would have been like, oh, man, this is going to be a good test for us. And I'm looking at it, and I'm like, man, that's not going to be a good test for us. Sacramento's been abysmal. And I know they got a win yesterday, and they got their second win. And Golden State's even looked bad. Like, they haven't looked good.
Golden State has not looked good. They have not looked good. Wiggins has been, I would say,
a shell
of himself from the finals and what he was like in the playoffs last year.
Got that big money now. I'm like, he's complacent.
He's regressing. He's regressing back to the mean.
Yeah, I was really, really, really dreading this, Mike. I was really dreading going to the Lakers game, the Lakers still not having a win, and us being the first win. Like, I don't know why, but I'm really glad they got a win so that we don't have to worry about that, because they're surely not winning tomorrow night. The Pelicans are going to destroy them. Zion might eat them. I don't know. But I don't think the Lakers are winning before we play them on Saturday. So Sunday. I didn't want us to be the potential first victim.
The Lakers are just, it's awful to watch. You watch that team play, and even though LeBron's getting his numbers, I've seen him play enough, and so have you, that you can tell when it's kind of just he's – and it's scary. It just points out again how good the guy is, that he's just kind of, all right, here we go.
Well, and I think he knows it's a losing cause.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But the fact that he knows it's a losing cause and yet he can still throw up a 28-8-8 like it's nothing is sort of incredible. And then Anthony Davis is just, I mean, he's a guy that when we look back and we had so many conversations about the fact that we didn't believe LeBron was ever going to cede control to Anthony Davis. At that point, we were having those conversations believing that the Anthony Davis that we were looking at was going to be
good,
the New Orleans Anthony Davis, and probably a guy who was even better than that because he was going to continue to improve as he aged into the middle of his prime. And instead, he's gone completely the other direction. And he's a guy that just doesn't attack the rim with the same ferocity that he used to. His jumper has pretty much abandoned him. And he just, because of, like, looking at his body, the way it's changed, his lower body looks so much bulkier and bigger. And he's just not as light on his feet. And I don't feel like he's as impactful a defender as he was. And that says nothing of the rest of the Lakers roster, which quite honestly is filled with guys who, on good teams, the third best player on the Lakers, and I know that this has been a topic of conversation amongst many different podcasts, but the third best player on the Lakers might not even be in the rotation with the Cavs. I mean, legitimately might not even see the floor. Because who do you think is the Lakers' third best player? Lonnie Walker?
Austin Reeves? I mean, Beverly's been abysmal.
Okay, so I pulled up the stats. So let's just say the third best player in terms of PER and points per game is Lonnie Walker.
It's got to be him then, right?
If Lonnie Walker is on the Cavs, how many minutes a game is Lonnie Walker playing for the Cleveland Cavaliers? Is he in the rotation?
He's probably the eighth or ninth man.
At best, right? At best, especially when Garland gets back.
Yeah.
At best, he's the eighth or ninth man. And on the Lakers, he's their third best player. So this team's going nowhere. We speculated about trades, and obviously there's the whole Miles Turner advocating that the Lakers should really look hard at trading for him and Buddy Hield. So I laughed. I think it was Windhorse today on his podcast said something about, like, can you tamper with yourself? Is that tampering? Because Miles Turner's advocating for teams to trade for him. I don't know what's out there for the Lakers. There's probably nothing. I guess if they trade for Miles Turner and Buddy Hield, they're better. But
listen, if you want Miles Turner to travel down 3 points against the Nets, sign me up because that's what he said that after the game last night. They had a chance to beat the Nets last night, and three straight possessions, he turned the ball over. I think. I was watching it while I was watching the Browns game. I had a dual screening on. I had the iPad going to watch the Browns, and I had my phone going to watch NBA TV. And turned it over three times, two or three times.
Miles Turner's fine, right? Like, he's fine.
But I mean, he's not going to change.
No, and Buddy Hield can shoot the ball. He's shooting 9 threes a game, and he's shooting 45%. On those threes. That's pretty good. That would definitely help the Los Angeles Lakers. But does Buddy Hield and Miles Turner, do those two guys make you a championship team? No. Miles Turner is averaging 13 points and 7 rebounds a game. Like, they make you better, but they don't make you a championship contender. And is it worth the Lakers trading those two number one picks, the 27 and the 29, in order to pick up Buddy Hield and Miles Turner? Maybe. I mean, if you're LeBron, you're like, hey, I'll probably be with Bronny, or I'll be retired, or I'll be just cruising way, 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 way past Kareem by the time those draft picks are there. So what does he care? So, you know, bring me some help. But that doesn't change the Lakers' fortunes if you bring those two guys in. And then you start looking around the league and say, who can they get? Maybe Kyrie. Maybe he is the guy, like you mentioned earlier. Does he make them a championship contender? That's a hefty no. So I don't know what's out there for the Lakers to do. There's nothing really that you can do. And I heard somebody talking about, could you trade Anthony Davis? But then the counter argument to that was, if you're LeBron and you're trading Anthony Davis, like, normally a guy like Anthony Davis, right? You get some combination of a couple of rotation players, but the big prizes in that would be draft picks. Well, the Lakers and LeBron don't really want or care about draft picks. So that doesn't really make sense. And those draft picks, when you're in Los Angeles, you're probably always going to have a better chance than you do in Cleveland or Detroit to be able to attract free agents. So maybe those draft picks aren't as valuable to you. But still, I don't see that there's anything out there, at least not right now, that the Lakers can do that can honestly put them into championship contention. And I guess the question becomes, is LeBron, if you had the right team around LeBron, is LeBron still capable of being the best player on a championship team? I'm not sure the answer to that anymore.
He'd look really good on this Cavs team.
No.
You keep saying that. You don't think he would?
No, absolutely not. No thanks.
Disagree.
I'm not saying it won't happen. I'm not saying it couldn't happen. I'm not saying it couldn't work. But no thanks.
It would be nice for them to win it without, like, to do it without him. Like, right?
It would. Yeah, for sure. For sure. And it's not even like, hey, I want to stick it to LeBron or this or that. I just think that when you bring LeBron in, you're bringing in a lot of other things that go along with LeBron. And you're bringing along a situation where you got to cater to what he wants, needs, does. And we've said it a million times. I just don't see a scenario where LeBron James is not the alpha, it's my team guy. And I honestly think that when he gets to that point, if he's already past Kareem and he can't be the guy for whatever reason, either because somebody younger is now on his team who's clearly better than him, or he's just slipped to the point where there's guys who in the past you never would have considered being better than him. I think when he gets to that point, I'm not sure what that looks like. Does he retire? Does he rebel? I don't know what it looks like, because it's just hard to envision. We've never seen LeBron even remotely come close to being deferential to somebody else on his team. Everything is run through him no matter where he's been. And I don't foresee that changing despite his advancing age.
Yep, I agree. All right, Mike, we got an update real quick.
Okay.
On the Nets, Cam Thomas is going on Twitter, not happy about not getting any playing time. He's changed his Instagram handle to FreeCT and has chains on both sides of it. And he posted a video of a guy yelling, "I put in all my blood, sweat, and tears, and look what I got. Effing nothing." Cam Thomas throwing the heat on Jacques Vaughn, apparently. How many minutes do you think Cam Thomas has played this season?
Well, I have no idea. I'm going to look at the box score and see how many he played tonight.
Zero.
He played one.
So how many minutes do you think he's played this season? They've played, what is it, 8 games. How many minutes?
I'm going to guess he's played 17 minutes.
Oh, you're too high. Too high. It's 15 minutes. Man, when Cam Thomas is setting things on fire.
If I
would have told you he was on the Nets, would you have known that he was on the Nets?
Yeah. I knew he was. I knew Cam Thomas, LSU. He was a draft pick. I knew.
I mean, not saying that he needs minutes, because I don't really know if he's that much. I mean, I guess anything's better than what's going on over there right now. Oh, wait, not the Lakers. Anyways.
I can't be rooting any harder than I am against the Brooklyn Nets for the rest of the season.
Are you rooting? So when the Nets play the Sixers, you're rooting for the Sixers, right?
I think I am.
Look at this.
I don't have complete disdain for Joel Embiid.
What about Doc? Do you like Doc?
I don't dislike Doc as a human being. I'm not sure how great of a coach he is, but there's nothing in Doc's basketball history that causes me to dislike Doc because of something that he's done. Now, he's blown leads and he's done things, but he hasn't been coaching my team while he's doing those things. So, yeah, I don't have any animosity towards Doc. I don't really have any animosity towards Joel Embiid. Now, I think Joel Embiid has not come through in the playoffs, and I think he hasn't maximized who he can be because he's never been in great condition. But I don't actively dislike Joel Embiid, whereas James Harden, I just actively dislike guys who don't come through in big moments and the style of play. But yes, I will be rooting for the Philadelphia 76ers. What's sad is I grew up a Sixers fan. I loved the Dr. J, Andrew Toney, Bobby Jones, Mo Cheeks, Moses Malone, that edition of the Philadelphia 76ers. Like, I was a Philly fan. That was my first team other than the Cavs when I was a kid. So it hurts me that I don't like the Sixers. But sorry, I don't like the Sixers, but I'll be rooting for them against Brooklyn. Let's put it that way, for sure.
All right. I don't know if there's anything else you want to talk about, but there's one thing I saw. Have you seen the stats for SGA in his last five games? We don't talk Thunder. We don't talk SGA very much.
I know he's been putting up big numbers. I know he had 30-something today.
Yeah, okay. His last five games, 32, 6, and 5. 28, 3, and 7, 33, 5, and 8, 24, 5, and 6, and 38, 6, and 9. Those are some pretty good stat lines right there.
Well, you know what's happening soon, right?
Oh, he's got to go home, take a rest.
Yeah, they got to shut him down. They're shutting him down very quickly. It's not going to be happening for him. It's funny because you think back to, I believe that was his rookie year when he was with the Clippers and they won, I think, two games against the Warriors. Maybe that was 2018. I can't remember. And it seemed like he was a guy that was on the rise. And not to say that he hasn't risen, because he has, but he's just completely faded from your consciousness because, A, he's playing for Oklahoma City, who has been objectively horrible. And every season he plays like 40 or 50 games because they shut him down with some phantom injury at the end of the season. So he's a guy who, there's a lot of teams out there that if suddenly he became available, that they would want him. But I don't see why Oklahoma City, he's a few years older than the Chet, Giddy, their next draft pick is going to be. But he's a guy who, it seems like, as long as he wants to stick around, why would you be in a hurry to deal him if you were Oklahoma City? Yeah, okay. It makes no sense.
He's the only player with multiple 35-5-2-2 slash lines. 30 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, and 2 blocks. He's got it twice this year.
Okay.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. Some other fun facts that I'm pulling up. I'm thinking if you'll stat muse. The Warriors are 0-4 in away games, Mike.
They have not looked good. They have not looked good. You wonder how much does the Draymond Jordan Poole incident, how much does that play on those guys day in and day out? Draymond was such a, I don't know what the right word is, because I think leader is too strong of a word to attach to Draymond, but I do think that he was sort of that emotional centerpiece. He was the guy who, he's the rah-rah guy, because Clay and Steph are not quite as demonstrative, vocal as Draymond is. And the fact of that whole incident and just the way that his teammates look at him, I don't care what you say, it has to be different. It has to be, that relationship between him and his teammates has to have been changed and affected by what went on. And he's been a big part of their team. And if he's not at full capacity in terms of that relationship piece with his teammates, I think that those are little things that just chip away at a team's championship DNA. And then that combined with the fact that the younger guys, as we said earlier, Wiggins and Poole have been maybe not as good as they were. But then you also have, you got Wiseman and Moody, and like Kuminga got a DMP tonight. So you're trying to thread the needle there of developing those young guys, but doing it in a championship environment with a team that obviously wants to get back and repeat. And that's not an easy thing to do. Now, as long as they stay healthy, I would expect they're going to slowly rise up the standings in the West as time moves on. But there's certainly some early signs of concern that you have to have with this team just because of sort of the situation they have personnel-wise and these two different generations that you're trying to mold together. And then the whole Draymond piece just throws a monkey wrench into that. Yeah. There's no way to measure that from the outside. We obviously can't tell. We'll never know. But you just can't tell me that an incident like that happens and everybody just is like, okay, we're putting it behind us. We're all good now. That just doesn't happen. You can't convince me of that.
Yeah, I agree. We'll have to see how it plays out. Maybe time does heal wounds and maybe things will work out for them. I don't know what's going to happen, but I mean, it's early still for them. I still have faith they can turn it around. I have faith that they can turn it around.
I don't think they're headed for a sub 500 season. Let's put it that way. Unless Steph goes down with an injury, then all bets are off.
Yeah. All right. I've got one more thing to talk about with you, Mike, and then we can talk Browns really quickly.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Luka Doncic leads the league in the most clutch points this season. Name the two players, Mike, that are right behind him by only one. So Luka Doncic has 21 clutch points. These two players, and they are on the same team, and it's a Western Conference team.
Okay, clutch points behind Luka Doncic. They're on the same team. Two guys, Western Conference.
Western Conference.
All right, so I have to look for teams that have played some close games. They're both on the same team.
A surprise team. I'll give you that little nugget too.
I'm going to go with one of those guys is Lauri Markkanen.
You're on the right team, Mike, but you don't have the right player.
But I don't. So Jordan Clarkson clearly then has
to be. He loves to shoot.
Okay. And then I need a second guy.
This guy also has a storied history with the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Kelly Olynyk.
Yes, Kelly Olynyk. They both have 20 points in the clutch. Olynyk is shooting 100% from three in the clutch.
Wow.
There you go.
All right, so let's just stay with the Utah Jazz for a second.
Yeah.
6-2, baby. And just, I mean, hard to fathom that this team could possibly be 6-2. And not when you look at the individual players, they have some guys that have had some success in the league, but it just seems like such a weird mishmash of parts that it just didn't feel like they could put it together to any degree. But for whatever reason...
Are they the Cavs? Now, I know I asked this question of another team last week. Are they the Cavs of this year, Mike? Are they the team that no one expected to be good?
I don't think so because here's why. I don't think so because I don't think that they don't have, if you look at the guys who are playing, I don't think you clearly don't have the same core of young guys that the Cavs had last year with Garland, Mobley, and Allen. You don't have that. I guess if you look at young players, if you still consider Markkanen young, Sexton young, those are really your two young guys. And I'm not sure that the potential of those two is equal to the potential of the Cavs trio from last year. I think it's more likely. I read something today basically saying how long can Danny Ainge let this winning go on before he starts just.
Well, I'm just looking at their wins, Mike. They beat Denver. They beat Minnesota. They beat the Pelicans.
I know. They've beaten real teams.
They beat Houston. They beat Memphis. They beat Memphis. It's not like they lost a game to Denver and they lost a game to Houston.
Which, no, I agree 100%.
Like, they're not beating slouch teams. It's not like they've played.
Right.
Like, it's not like they've played. I mean, they played three teams that are bad, but the rest of the teams have been good teams.
Marking it. I mean, you beat Memphis. 22.6 points per game, 9.2 rebounds, one block per game. Shooting 50% from the field.
I'd take him over Gobert right now. Gobert's that team's concerning me a little bit, but and they're getting smoked tonight. Oh, they cut it to 10.
They got some weird. I mean, there's some weird. I think personalities in that group. Maybe not quite as weird as Brooklyn, but they definitely have Rudy Gobert is kind of an oddball personality. Towns has some weird characteristics. D'Angelo Russell, I think, has always sort of had been described as maybe quirky.
When you look at their wins are all against terrible teams.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like they, I mean, I guess San Antonio's overperformed, but they've beaten Oklahoma City, San Antonio, and the Lakers. Those are the only teams that Minnesota's beaten, and they've lost to the Spurs, and they lost to Utah, and they lost to Brooklyn. Oh, no, that was preseason, but I don't know. All right, what else did you have for me, Mike?
Well, I had Markkanen as one of the things, okay. And I think the overachieving teams in the Western Conference. So the one team that everybody thought was going to be bad that has cooperated nicely has been the Houston Rockets, who are sitting at 1-7. And then the other three teams that the consensus from everyone, us included, that those teams were going to be horrible are the Thunder, the Jazz, and the Spurs. So if you had to pick one of those three teams to, I don't want to say maintain, but which of those three teams is going to have the best record at the end of the season, do you think?
Between the Spurs, the Jazz.
Spurs, Jazz, and Thunder.
I'd probably say the Spurs just because of Popovich.
Yeah, I think the Spurs because they have the most. Their young guys, Vassell and Keldon Johnson, are their two, I think, probably most important players. And those two guys are guys that are not going to be, they're not going to be traded. They're not guys that are going to be on the block. I think San Antonio's roster is what it is. Maybe they could trade Jakob Poeltl to somebody. But otherwise, I think that the guys that they have on that roster are guys that are going to be around. Yeah. Whereas Utah feels like, it just seems hard to believe that they're going to continue to roll with this. But maybe. They, I think, have the because of the veterans they have, I think if they kept their roster intact and kept playing, you might say Utah. Because weirdly, even though it doesn't seem like these guys fit together, for some reason they do. And then Oklahoma City, I think Sam Presti has proven that when it comes time for them to tank and shut people down, they will clearly tank and shut people down. So I think Oklahoma City's the least likely. I'd probably pick the Spurs because I think the Jazz, based on what we know about Danny Ainge too, that there's probably going to be a point where they're going to shut guys down or start shipping guys out.
Yep, I think so. I think the Spurs have the best chance. And I'm just I wasn't even talking the rosters. I was just
you were counting on Pop.
Yeah. Yep.
In the other conference, the teams that we expected to be bad have been pretty bad or at least pretty mediocre. So you're talking about the bottom of the Eastern Conference, you're talking about Orlando, you're talking about Detroit, you're talking about Indiana, you're talking about the Wizards, you're talking about the Hornets. Those are all teams that I think those teams are going to end up at the bottom of the Eastern Conference, along with it looks like our Brooklyn Nets are probably going to end up down there. So as we said earlier, very, very happy to have taken the under on the Brooklyn Nets. I don't see any of those Eastern Conference teams that we just mentioned being able to claw their way up into that, even into the play-in. Now, maybe you can say Washington, could battle for a play-in spot. But I don't think Orlando, Detroit, I think maybe I had them a little bit overrated. Although Cade's been really good. He's averaging like 23 a game and 8 rebounds. And I think Detroit's a team that is probably one more good draft away and then just growing with your young guys after that. Orlando, I think, is the same way. One more good draft. And that team could start to really, if they can avoid the injury bug that continues to bite them. Now you got Bol Bol in the fold down there in Orlando. Clearly surpassed Mo Bamba in the plus 7 foot guys who are capable of doing a bunch of different things out on the floor. I think those teams are going to end up at the bottom and then up at the top. Obviously, Milwaukee's been very, very good. Giannis is, I think, the MVP campaign for Giannis looks pretty solid at this point, and he's averaging, what, like 34 a game and 13 rebounds, and he's just been destroying people. And I think that is only going to continue. I will be stunned if Milwaukee is not your number one seed in the Eastern Conference. I don't see anybody overtaking them. And then the rest of those teams in the middle, I think, depending on how you like Toronto or Atlanta or Philly, whatever. And then, obviously we talked about the Cavs earlier, and I think their chances of finishing in the top six based on the way this season has started, I feel very confident that that's going to happen. And I think even getting into the top four, I think, is more likely today than it was when the season started based on what we've seen to this point. Yep. So.
All right. Anything else, Mike?
NBA? Last two things. So I think out West, Phoenix has been a surprise to me just in terms of they're playing, I would say, almost as well after that opening night.
Quick question. I took the over on Phoenix, right?
Well, let me pull the sheet in front of me. Phoenix, we both took the under, unfortunately.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh.
Although I'm not sure we're not right, because you're still talking about they got to get to 53 wins. Yeah. And I just think you look around the league, and I know the results have been goofy, and we've talked about it, but I think it's going to be hard for a team to get to 55, 60 wins. There's so many good teams. Like, there's no, even the bad teams have good players. And if you don't show up to play, I think those teams can beat you. But I've been surprised by how well Phoenix has sort of weathered the storm with Jay Crowder. And looks like Chris Paul is maybe starting to slow down a little bit, but Booker's been so good. And they've figured it out, at least to this point. And maybe they'll surprise us here in the regular season. I still don't know that I'd put them near the top of the favorites of teams I'd see it coming out of the West, but Phoenix has looked surprisingly good. New Orleans, we've already talked about. When they're healthy, their offense is as good as anybody's in the league. And if they're healthy, I know you kind of were maybe not as high on them as I was, but I feel like that team can make the Western Conference Finals the way they're constituted. And if Zion can stay healthy, which, as we know and have discussed ad nauseum, is
a big if.
Yeah, it's a big if. It's a big if for sure.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Then everybody else is kind of just middling along, right? There, you got Denver's kind of middling along, Minnesota, Memphis, Dallas. They're all kind of just, they haven't been great. They haven't been terrible. And I think we'll start to see things shake out over the next couple of weeks, and you'll start to see things sort of normalize, and we'll see where teams are going to be. So, it's been a good season so far. It's been fun. There's just so many good teams, and every team, even the teams that are bad, have players that I'm interested in and that I want to check out and see and look at the box scores and watch them play. So it's been fun.
Yep. Speaking of fun, who was that football team last night, Mike?
Well, I told you beforehand that.
Yeah, so sidebar. Mike and I talked before. We talked. I called him on the way home saying what, like kicking his brain about the Browns game last night. He pretended like he didn't know that there was a game. and then he said, my favorite thing he said to me was, oh, the Browns are this is probably a game. The Browns are just going to win the week before the bye week to get all the Cleveland's hopes back up again, just to completely demoralize us.
Can I give you the whole case?
Yeah.
They were 2-1 in the division. Joe Burrow can't beat the Browns. The defense has turned the corner. Deshaun Watson is only 4 or 5 games away. If we can just keep this thing around 500, Deshaun comes back. We go 6-0. We're right there. The Ravens aren't really that good. We played them pretty even with Jacoby Brissett. Look, we lost the Jets game that we should have won. Browns fans are completely delusional, and I guess I would include you and me in that. And I'll be totally honest that you watched the performance that they put on against the Bengals last night, and you're like, this team, that's the team that I think people here in Cleveland at least envisioned coming into the season, that that's what it would look like, that the defense would be a good defense, maybe not great, but certainly good, and that they'd be able to pressure the quarterback, which is what they did last night. And offensively, you had a good mix. Amari Cooper was outstanding last night, and Chubb just is what he is. And you can't give him the ball enough other than just pounding him into the ground completely. But that guy, when he has the ball in his hands, is just electric, and he's hard to bring down, and he never goes down on the first contact. So you watch that team, and it feels like that's the team that everybody expected us to be heading into the season. And we've only seen that team once. We only saw them against Cincinnati. We haven't seen that type of performance in any other game this season.
Well, I thought the Steelers game, we looked good.
Right, but you're talking about an inferior opponent. Cincinnati is theoretically a good opponent, although I'm not sure how good they are this year. Their offensive line is garbage.
Well, their offensive line was garbage too. I do have to say, though, when Jacoby Brissett went and at the end of the game, and you saw that, right? He goes, "I almost got you 55. You heard that, right?
Yes.
Did you hear that?
Yes.
Wasn't that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
That was pretty good.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Listen, we don't, next week we won't have any
Browns
talk. Who's
the first game coming out of the bye? I don't even know. I know the next four games are against high quality opponents.
Yeah. So hold on. I'll pull it up for you. Hold on. Give me 1 second.
Although maybe not as high quality, because I think we have Tampa in this run of the next four.
If you told me that we beat Tampa, I wouldn't be surprised.
No, I wouldn't be surprised at this point. Tampa's been sort of a mess.
Oh, okay. So we play the Dolphins.
Yeah.
That's a loss. We play the Bills. That's a loss. We play the Buccaneers. We could win that game. That's Thanksgiving weekend. And then Deshaun comes back after that?
He's back for the Texans game, yeah. So you got three more games.
So if you can win the Buccaneers game, then you're going.
I told you, I looked at the schedule yesterday. I think we can go 11-6.
I mean, could we beat the Dolphins? I would say we could.
It's not out of the realm of possibility that you could beat the Dolphins. If you win 2 out of 3, that would make you 5-6.
And then you look at the end of the season. I mean, the end of the season schedule loosens up. Okay, we play the Texans. They're terrible. We play the Bengals. We've dominated them. We play the Ravens. The Ravens, the last 7 weeks of the season, the Ravens are the only theoretical team that I'm, like, afraid of.
Yeah, the Saints are fine, but certainly beatable. And Washington
is pitiful.
Fine. Well, they're not pitiful. They're fine. They're not good. If you're a good team, you should beat them.
And the Steelers are terrible.
Right.
Well, here we are, sane Browns fans, talking ourselves into this. So, listen.
Don't worry. They'll take care of it. They're going to go 0-3 in the next three, so that the 6 games with Deshaun Watson are completely meaningless. It's going to happen.
Okay.
Telling you, it's going to happen. It's going to happen.
Oh, one more thing on the Nets.
Uh-oh.
Kevin Durant tonight, they asked him about how he found out about Steve Nash. I went to practice this morning. He was there. I went back to my hotel room. Or shoot around. He was there. I went back to my hotel room. I took a nap. At 1:15, I woke up from my nap, turned to the right, and I seen it on ESPN. I was shocked. I couldn't believe it. Kevin Durant found out about Steve Nash being fired.
Wouldn't you say
from a nap.
It'd be great if he said, finally, I asked for this guy to be fired months ago. What's taking so long? I can't even put into words just the situation and how, like I said, how badly I'm going to be rooting against this team every time they play. No thank you on the Brooklyn Nets.
All right. On that note, Mike.
Sorry, Joe Harris.
Yeah, sorry, Joe Harris. We still like you, Joe. We apologize for all the slander.
Yeah, we apologize for the Brooklyn Nets slander. Hopefully.
Well, I'm not going to ask Joe his opinion.
Yeah, we're not going to get
on the record.
We won't get Joe's opinion on the record, but off the record, we may be able to get something out of him.
I have a feeling I know what his feeling is.
Yes.
Anyways, just really quickly, Mike, just so you know, as we're wrapping the podcast up, Cam Johnson and the Phoenix Suns are only up by 6 now with 6 minutes left. So we might have an interesting end of the game if you want to watch it while you're editing.
There you go. I may have to do that as I get cranking here at 12:18 a.m. on Wednesday morning now. Wednesday morning. So
happy Wednesday.
Happy Wednesday. Happy Wednesday. All right, we'll leave it there. Thank you for listening to tonight's NBA episode of the Hoopheads Pod. And we will be back with you talking more NBA next week. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.